State Police.
Hello? Yes, Polish. Would you please help me?
Calm down, ma'am. Tell me what the problem is.
The Soros. They have a farm around here. I am a friend of their daughter, Alexis. This guy broke in during the night. He broke in and he murdered everyone. My friend's been taken away. She's in the back of his old truck. He killed a guy at a gas station.
Welcome to Now Playing's bonus movie review of High Tension.
Are you going to finally take the plunge?
A Podbean backer review chosen by Scott Justin.
Do you love me?
Yes!
Hosted by Stuart, Jacob, and Arnie.
Go easy on them, all right? Or they'll be up all night chirping.
This podcast will contain detailed plot spoilers and harsh language.
Bitch, pussy skank,
piss ass,
easy fag,
you're a pig.
Listener discretion is advised.
Are they recording?
Today we're discussing High Tension, or Aut Tension, starring Cécile de France, Mai Wen, Philippe Nahon, directed by Alexandra Aja. This is Arnie, your highly tense co-host of Now Playing. And Stuart?
This is Jacob, your obsessive co-host.
Indeed. Why are we covering French films? I didn't know we did that at Now Playing, but thanks, patrons. It's March, and we're doing something a little bit different.
Yes, thank you, Scott Justin. He picked the patron level of $500 where he could pick a movie, any movie, for us to review. And he came up with a couple different ideas, and one of them was High Tension, a French horror film that, honestly, all he said was it was a French film by Alexandra Aja. I knew that director. I'd seen a couple of his films. We kind of talked about it ourselves and said, okay. So thank you, Scott, for your support. Thank you very, very much. And we're happy to do this for you.
He didn't say ultimately why he picked High Tension, but I tend to suspect that it came up because we talked about it. Brock, Arnie, and I last October were reviewing the latest Texas Chainsaw installment, Leatherface. I happened to mention that I knew the directors because they were part of the extreme French cinema movement. And you were like, what? French people make horror movies?
Yeah, I had this question for you, Stuart, because, you know, with cinema, I like to put everything in its box. And, like, I think of American horror, you know, the slasher, with starting with Carpenter's Halloween, and British horror, I'm sure that's something. I only think of The Wicker Man, but I'm sure there's some category. J-horror, I know what a J-horror film is. But the French, isn't every French film like a horror film according to the French? It's existential. Oh, the worst horror is living this life. Like, what is French horror? Is that a genre?
I didn't know anything about this film, but what Scott said, he was trying to decide between this and Green Room, both because he wanted to discuss extreme horror, suspense, slasher kinds of films. And so there were a couple of the options, and he said that this one, the end frustrated him to no end, and he wondered if our breakdown could explain what he was missing.
Ah, oh no, this is always a bad position. We're supposed to explain a film. Well, I don't know that we can do that, but we can talk about our impressions. I'm not so sure they're different from Scott's, but as far as French cinema goes, I think the tradition goes back all the way to Hitchcock. The French were passionate cinephiles. They talked and wrote a lot about film, and they're really credited for part of why Alfred Hitchcock is so revered. They wrote so much about his Hollywood career. They define, really, they deconstructed many of his seminal films. We understand Psycho and Vertigo and the Birds because the French broke it down so well, and many of them emulated it. I'm very familiar and a big fan of French thrillers. Claude Chabrol and several modern directors, they make French thrillers all the time. But what we're here to talk about today was really, I would say, an 8-year cycle starting at the beginning of this millennium where they just went extreme. They showed a level of violence that had not been put on film before. And honestly, I don't think it started with France. I think it started in Japan. When I think about Audition, Battle Royale.
Audition, I knew it.
You know, that's where the extreme stuff started. And then it spread to other world markets. We got our torture porn here in America. And then France, yeah, it's supposed to be a more refined culture. But no, they make sensuous, provocative works, but they will go big. I mean, Imagine this. Their biggest star, Monica Bellucci. She's beloved. It would be like, you know, Julia Roberts 15 years ago. 9-minute rape scene where she is like thrust on the ground in a tunnel, and just, it is a savage scene in a movie that will probably be the one that the movement is remembered for. Irreversible. You guys ever hear of Irreversible?
No.
Oh my God. It is. I remember just being, I've literally soaked in sweat when I was at the movie theater. I literally, by the end of it, that's not even the worst scene. I mean, I'll be honest with you.
Oh.
It's one of the most extreme things I've ever seen. I was just soaked in sweat. I couldn't believe it. It knocked me to the ground. This Gaspar Noé is, he's Argentinian, but he works with French money, French actors. And he made a film that really made it permissible to do whatever the hell you wanted in cinema. And I know it was an influence on this film we're here today, because one of its stars is the killer in this film. And so they very much are referencing that here with High Tension. But I'm kind of sad, because I'd love to just do a whole riff on extreme French cinema. That's not what I'm here to do. I have to limit it to High Tension, which I think is the box office breakout. It's not the best one. It's not the first one, but it's the one that broke here in America. Lionsgate picked it up. They released it in theaters here in 2005. And people knew about it. It made $4 million, which for a foreign film is good money.
I thought I had actually seen this movie. I remembered seeing some movie about a woman in a thriller with short hair going after a male predator. Turns out I was thinking of Hard Candy, not High Tension, with Ellen Page. But yes, very similar.
Yeah, a Lionsgate movie. Again, Lionsgate had a brand. You know, they're the people that brought us Saw, Hostel, Hard Candy. Yes, they released High Tension. They would be the studio to tackle material that, frankly, the major studios wouldn't dare do. But I'm going to just say, as a preamble, if you're interested in knowing where all this kind of started, I'm going to give you real quick three films that I think you really should see before you see High Tension. Too late, I know. But Trouble Every Day. It's sort of a vampire film. In My Skin, it's sort of a body horror movie. It's about a businesswoman that gets a taste for her own flesh, literally. She starts to eat herself. And Irreversible. Those are the three that I think the triumvirate that really define. I mean, they're highly symbolic, highly violent, and I would say all of them are good. All of them are worth your time, worth your consideration.
Yeah, I will say this. I don't know if this falls into this new wave of French extremity, but Raw, which came out, I guess, a couple of years in France, came out last year in America. But yeah, it's about cannibalism, you know, as a metaphor for a young woman's budding sexuality. But yeah, you read about it. People were like throwing up in the theater. There are some very disturbing scenes in it.
Yeah, again, the underlying subtext, it's either usually two things. Yes, it's either people having issues with their body, or people concerned about immigration. You know, France has its own issues with immigration, and metaphorically, that usually works itself out in these scenarios in French extreme cinema. But yeah, it was really popular, I would say, about 10 years ago. It reached its peak with High Tension, Inside, Martyrs. And yeah, I think you still are seeing films coming out of France that are like it, like Raw.
Now, I haven't seen any of those films you mentioned. I don't see as many foreign films as I'd like to, honestly. I'm not subtitle averse, but I just am not exposed to them that often, except for the Oscar bait, which I have less interest in. And truthfully, I knew we were doing a French film, and we were discussing amongst ourselves, can we find the not dubbed version, all of this, is there an extended cut? I sat down, like, all right, let's do some French art cinema here. I'm like preparing for a deep discussion. I'm preparing for like a 2.5 hour existential, like you're talking about, Jacob, about, you know, a bunch of people sitting around smoking and everything with the Eiffel Tower in the background drinking wine.
Berets, French bread. Yes, all that.
But I knew the name Alexandre Aja when we were talking. It wasn't until after I saw this movie, though, that I went back and said, okay, who is this director? What have I seen of his? I've seen his American stuff. I saw The Hills Have Eyes, the remake of it, the Wes Craven film. It came out in 06. I saw that in theaters. And then Piranha 3D. I saw that in theaters. And that movie has kind of a funness to it, a sense of humor. Then we reviewed Maniac, the remake of the 80s slasher.
He wrote it and produced it, didn't direct that one, but yes, it was involved. Maniac, that's how I like to call it.
So I haven't seen Horns or The Ninth Life of Louis Drax.
Don't ever. I will say I've seen about half of his work. And yeah, I would say out of all the extreme French filmmakers, he's been the one to be most successful in Hollywood as well. That there's really three remakes under his belt with, as you said, Hills Have Eyes, Piranha, and Mirrors. It was a J-horror movie they wanted to make for English audiences. So he directed Kiefer Sutherland in a movie that I didn't see it, but supposedly it's not bad. And yeah, then he's sort of flamed out. I enjoyed Horns. It's actually based on Stephen King's son's book, Joe Hill. It's Daniel Radcliffe is a guy who wakes up one morning, sees that he has devil horns growing out his head, sees that he can suddenly influence the behavior of people. I actually liked it. I thought it worked.
I saw a trailer for that, actually. I was interested in it, but I didn't know if it was worth checking out to see Harry Potter as a demon.
I would say it's not very extreme. If you want to see him in his essence, it's very clear that he loves early 80s American slasher films. And it was quite a thing for him in 2002 to find funding in France to make an homage to that. But that is, in fact, what High Tension is. Unlike some of this in the movement, where I really do feel like it's beloved directors making art, using violence for a point. Here, this is all homage. This is, I want to make my chainsaw. I want to have my slasher. And so I think that's why it broke in America. I actually knew someone, the year it came out, it was 2005, that for Halloween dressed up as the killer. Got the suit, got the smiley face, even got like some of the prosthetics for the, you know, it was like after he took a couple blows from the barbed wire fence.
Wow.
Now, how did you watch this? Because I know when it's a foreign film, I typically like to watch it in its original language and I'll read the subtitles at the bottom. It's just my preference. I remember when we did Battle Royale, I switched over to the English dub for a little bit and it was so awful, I hurried back. So, but I was able to get the unrated, I guess, cut, NC-17 cut. The non-R-rated one that's got more violence in it.
That's what I saw as well. I did some research after, and basically, that's the real cut. To avoid an X rating in the States, they had to cut some stuff, so there is another cut. But when this was released in France and everything, the unrated cut is the cut. And yes, I did some research. This is what they call dub titles. It's not actually subtitles where somebody listened to the French and translated it. It's where somebody listened to the dub track and transcribed it. So I don't quite know how that's different. Apparently, people really have a problem with dub titles, but I always want to hear the original actors giving the voice. I've often found the voiceover actors don't give the same performances. You know, they're just not as emotional as the real actors. And again, I'm not subtitle adverse. I don't mind. My sister once told me, if I wanted to read, I'd get a book.
This is not a movie where you're going to have to do a lot of reading.
Yeah, that is the surprise, is you don't have to have it.
Ultimately, not that important.
I want to say to Scott, if you think the credits were a little, quote, light, so is the movie.
Yeah. I will say this much. I watched it both ways. When I originally saw this movie, it was on video back in probably 2006. And to watch it for this viewing, I saw it both ways. The unrated French cut that is about a minute longer, and all of the shortening that's in the R-rated cut has to do with the violence. You don't see any blood spurts. Is basically when you watch the R-rated dub version that ran in American cinemas, you're not seeing any blood spurts, but you're also seeing a slightly different story. I thought it was interesting. In the dub version, the only people they dub is Alex and her family. And it actually is implied that they're American and they've come to the French farm from America. So every time we see Marie, she is speaking in her native French language with subtitles. But whenever she's interacting with her friend or we hear the family, they're speaking with dub actors that are not inflecting a French sound to their voice and are not subtitled.
Are they still there to study for whatever test they're going to take?
Yes. Yeah. The girls are there to go to law. And again, they will retain all of that when they're alone and talking. They will sometimes be in English, sometimes be subtitled. But Alex always sounds like an American, whereas Marie, even when she's dubbed, will have a French sound to her voice.
That's odd.
Yeah. They changed the plot a little. I mean, I don't know if it matters that much that Americans moved to France, but clearly when you watch the original cut, they're just big city people that have moved to the country.
I guess it changes a little bit, you know, the French killing Americans.
Yeah, or just seeing that American influence. Indeed, this is about taking an American style from long ago and bringing it to rural France. I should say I watched this movie a third time as well with the commentary tracks. I wanted to know what the filmmakers had to say, and that could have used some subtitling as well.
I was going to ask if they dubbed it, because I did watch one bonus feature, and I'm like, nope, can't understand.
Yeah, it took three ticks. It took three ticks. Three ticks? It took three takes. Oh, I was constantly doing that. It was like a 10-second delay on everything they were explaining. But any way you watch it, you're going to get the same plot. Arnie, why don't you give it to him, and we'll get into High Tension.
Alex and her best friend Marie are on a study trip at Alex's parents' remote home, thinking that without distraction, they can study better. But Marie harbors a serious crush on boy crazy Alex. That first night, as everyone is asleep, a killer breaks into the house and kills Alex's parents and kid brother. He takes Alex hostage, but Marie escapes his notice through luck and careful hiding. Marie tries to save Alex while keeping the nameless killer unaware of her presence. The killer throws Alex into the back of his truck, and when Marie tries to unlock her chains, the killer slams the door, unwittingly capturing Marie as well. But when the killer stops for gas, Marie escapes to ask the attendant to call for help, but before he can, the killer murders the clerk. The truck drives away, and Marie calls the cops, but when they can't help fast enough, she steals the clerk's car and takes the gas station's pistol and gives chase to save her beloved Alex. But the killer is too smart and runs the car off the road. Finally, Marie and the killer get into a game of cat and mouse, and using a wood post wrapped in barbed wire, Marie kills the man and goes to rescue Alex. But Alex is still afraid and then starts to attack Marie. See, Marie has multiple personality disorder, as she was both the killer and the rescuer. When Alex starts to attack, Marie realizes Alex never loved her, and the killer persona takes over. After a bloody battle and a chase, Alex stabs Marie with a crowbar, and we end with Marie in a psychiatric ward, Alex watching through one-way glass, as credits roll.
Yes, your plot summary explains that this is a twist movie. Everything is going to be built up to a big third act surprise. I'm envious of you guys. This is, I think you guys are saying, the first time you've ever seen this movie. You'll be able to tell me when or if you were able to guess the big gender-bending twist. I can't remember. I saw the movie for the first time 10 years ago, and all I could remember coming back was that at some point she picks up a post with barbed wire and that she ends up being the killer.
You know what kind of gave it away for me? It was something outside the film. The name of this movie in England was Switchblade Romance, which sounds amazing. And so as I'm watching this, I just had that going in my mind the whole time. Switchblade Romance, Switchblade Romance. I'm like, well, it can't be this big, fat, ugly dude that's got like some romance. Like, there's got to be something else going on. Why would you call this Switchblade Romance? I mean, there's not even a switchblade in the film, but I guess he's got that razor. But yeah, that had me thinking the whole time. So when the twist happened, I'm like, okay, there it is. Kind of saw it coming. Oh, I guess we'll talk about it, how much sense it makes.
Yeah, and I'll say this. I'll talk about how I felt as we went through the movie. Never saw the twist coming at all.
Oh, good to know. And again, I might have been in the same way. I don't know what I knew going into the movie, and I don't remember how I experienced it scene by scene. But again, you will never forget the twist. 20 years from now, the only thing you'll remember perhaps about High Tension is this twist. But they tease it in the opening. There are two false starts to the beginning of this movie. One is that we have seen only from the back, Marie in a hospital gown. It looks like a sterile white room. She says, "Are they recording?" You might immediately assume that she's in police custody.
I actually assumed what we were getting is the survivor, and I couldn't even tell which woman it was. You know, it's a woman, and we'll find out later it's Marie. All you're seeing is the back with all the injuries and everything. Why would I think the person with the cuts on them is in police custody? She's in a hospital, she's being cared for, and she says, "Are they recording?" And so I think she's telling the story of the guy who attacked her.
And yet she's talking crazy too, right? I mean, she's just repeatedly, again, saying, "I won't let anyone come between us anymore. I won't let anyone come between us anymore." I mean, coming back to it a second time, it feels like they're screaming the secret, but I guess you wouldn't necessarily presume. But next scene, we are seeing that same character, Marie, limping through the forest. running out into the middle of a two-lane road, flagging down a driver, trying to get away from a killer who we'll find out is just a figment of her imagination she believes is herself when she wakes up actually at the beginning of the story.
Yeah, this whole thing is, oh, I guess the stuff in the jail cell or the mental institution's not a dream, but yeah, this whole scene of her bloody running down the road ends up being a dream. It threw me off. I'm just like, okay, is she a precog? She's going to see what's going to happen at the end of this movie? Why is she dreaming about this?
Again, I knew nothing about this movie at all. Nothing. Didn't know it was a slasher. Nothing. Because I just forgot Scott's message. It's been several weeks since we sent it and we've reviewed other movies. I see this opening and I'm like, well, I'm actually thinking like Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I'm happy because I'm like, wait, this is a horror film. This is cool. And then I see this. I think this is the initial victim who's going to try to get away like at the end of Texas Chainsaw. And it's going to be the hook into the plot. Like this is the first person and then we'll meet the real characters. When she says it's a dream, I'm like, so is she psychic? What's going on? Why is she having a dream about something that's obviously going to happen, something like it, somewhere in the movie?
No, because if this were an 80s slasher movie, you would identify her immediately. Oh, this is your last girl. And, you know, last girls are virginal. We'll find out from this dialogue in the car that her friend Alex is very promiscuous, always going off with guys and leaving her to drive home drunk. And she doesn't do well with men. So we think, okay, classic last girl.
And are we supposed to pick up that Marie has a thing for Alex? I feel like, again, when you're going for this twist, that should have been set up, that Marie was obsessive over Alex, that she wanted to get with her. She was jealous of all these guys that Alex was getting with. I didn't get that. I just got, oh, we're college students and Alex is sleeping around and Marie, I don't know, socially awkward. She shaved her head, so she's got her own thing going. I didn't get the sense that she was into Alex.
Oh, I totally did. Mm. And I wasn't sure if I was supposed to. I just was watching this and she was a little bit more butch and the other one was more femme.
Not a little. I mean, that haircut and the muscular body, the tight t-shirt, a lot about her says androgynous boy, which doesn't necessarily mean lesbian, but could.
But the way she was giving her friend shit about going off with all those boys, I'm sitting here like, are they doing a lesbian subplot here? Is that where this is going? I was picking up on it from this initial car ride when they're just singing together. I'm like, so am I supposed to think Marie is into Alex? It's not until I see Marie watching Alex take a shower later on that I'm like, oh, okay, I was right. But I got it right here from the start that there was some tension between them. And then my question was, is it one way?
You know, and the other thing for American audiences is that they're French. And so who knows even what that means, maybe culturally, even though it might read as gay in an American context. Oh, this is what French girls do, right? Blue is the warmest color. I don't know what I'm watching. The foreignness of it makes it easier to go along with this as just the setup to, oh, two girls going off to a cabin in the woods to have a horror movie.
But the thing we cut to next is perhaps my favorite scene of the movie. Again, I don't know what I'm in for. And we see this crappy old truck. And I'm like, okay. And then a guy's getting head in it. And I'm like, all right, that's okay. It's a little interesting. I wonder where this is going to go. I didn't realize when I said he was getting head that he was then going to throw the head out the window.
Yes, he's getting head from a severed head.
Yes. Is that supposed to be, thinking back on, I'm like, oh, was that supposed to be Alex's head? Because this is imaginary, right? Like, unless Marie went out, I don't know, while they were still driving and cut off someone's head and, I don't know, had oral sex with it. Like, this is just imaginary. So again, I feel like a twist is only useful, like, if you've set it up properly, if it plays by the rules. Hint at where I'm going with this film. So it just feels like, yeah, if that head was actually Alex's, who I don't really know what she looks like at this point. It's still early on in the movie. It wouldn't have told me right away, but it's just a random head that's thrown out.
The special effects team never say where they cast that head. It looks a lot like Mae Wynn, the stand-up comedian who is playing Alex. And I wonder if she didn't maybe pose for it, but we don't know.
IMDb trivia, I just looked there, did say that was supposed to be Alex's head.
It is. Okay. I take it back then.
I would say this. If the killer is not real, but a figment of the imagination, which is where they're going to go with all of this, then we can see that this road trip is just getting Marie hot, right? I mean, she doesn't have a penis, but if she did, having Alex sing French pop songs to her on a long road trip out to the country is like fellatio.
But what is with this foreplay when Alex says she thinks she sees somebody in the cornfield and runs off to scare Marie? Is this what sets Marie off? Because when I was reviewing my notes, I noticed that she says, if this is a joke, I'll make you regret it. And so I'm not quite sure, in retrospect, what to make of this scene. If Marie had run off, I would understand it a little more because she's crazy. But the fact that Alex is playing this hide-and-go-seek game and she's going to get in the car and pretend to drive off and leave Marie.
Here's one of the problems is we don't know anything about these characters prior to them showing up a couple hours and being attacked. I mean, we have no flashbacks. There's a photo of them traveling to Spain that sits on the mantle of the fireplace. But beyond that, we don't see any interaction that would give us any idea whether, yeah, Alex plays pranks all the time, whether this was a one-time whim, or whether she actually did think for a second she saw the killer in the corn.
Yeah, and the way I took it, they kind of tried to set it up where Marie has this fear of the country, and that's a big thing in horror films, like either the country person's afraid of the city person's afraid of the country. So I thought they were just trying to play with that. Set up Marie, she's the urban, yeah, last girl who's going to have to stand up to the horrors of the countryside.
Yeah, and again, you would tend to believe that if she's not promiscuous and running off with boys, she's more likely to live from a killer who's already established as sexual. Again, is the very introduction is him in that rusty old truck. And yes, Arnie, they did intend for it to be a reference to Jeepers Creepers.
Really? I was thinking the reference was to Reanimator, the head giving head, but I didn't catch the Jeepers Creepers reference, but that's kind of cool.
There's lots of references in this movie. Again, the more that you learn about this movie, it actually diminishes it. I mean, I definitely feel like this is a one-and-done film. You see it once, you got it. To study it, to look at it harder, to see it three times consecutively, as I do, is to be like, oh, okay, these are fanboys. Definitely, once they started talking on the commentary track, they talked about all the things they were trying to emulate. Maniac. In many ways, this movie is a remake of Maniac before they could actually remake Maniac. Macabre, which is another film by that filmmaker where, you know, it involved a severed head. And Dune. I mean, they were big fans of Dune. And Baron Harkonnen, they specifically got the killer to look like him, even dyed his hair orange so that he would look like the Baron, which he does, which is very scary. I think he is an underrated horror villain, Baron Harkonnen. Go for Kenneth McMillan if you want to. But again, if you listen to the commentary track, they point out again and again, every time they're stealing something, referencing something. This movie is nothing but a series of quotation marks.
That doesn't diminish it to me. That actually improves it to me that they're doing this homage and yet creating something unique and on their own. Now, once they get to this house, I think I know what movie we're seeing, though. I mean, how many home invasion movies are there from The Strangers? My go-to is always Last House on the Left, the Wes Craven one, Funny Games, whichever version of that you want to see, Straw Dogs. There's so many of these. I'm like, okay, it's a home invasion film. I can go with that.
Well, that's what's so bizarre to me watching this is I'm expecting a French horror film. And yeah, this seems like an homage to American slashers. Not that that's a ding against it necessarily. I like all the blood splatter in this film. But, you know, I'm thinking about Raw. I'm thinking about Personal Shopper, which is kind of like this weird ghost story kind of thing, which is very French. But this, yeah, it's American audiences. It's made for them.
Which is why it's a bigger hit here. I mean, let's face it. It can be hard to watch French films, not only because of the subtitles, but because they do deal with more abstractions, ambiguities. So much is visceral. And sometimes American audiences just want it clean on their plate. And this movie is more American than French. I will just make that argument. Because they are making all the references they do to American 80s slasher films, I think that it is French mostly just in the stylization of the violence, but not really in any way narratively.
Now, one thing I did read, and so I'd like to discuss it, I think it's also what Scott wants us to discuss as we go through, but they had said that they, in their mind, had an idea for a sequel. And the sequel would be what really happened versus what we see happening. I don't think that actually holds a whole lot of interest as far as box office.
I don't know how you do that movie, seeing what happens in this one.
But I do want to, as we go through, to try to figure out what the quote-unquote reality of the situation is, where Marie is, and what's really happening versus what we're seeing happen as we get there. But we're introduced, we did get a cut. It's the only time we leave Marie in this movie, is while they're driving there, we do jump to the house and we meet the mother and we see the little brother who's dressed up like a cowboy and very excited his sister's coming home. I could really relate to this. My sister was much, much older and I always got excited and wanted to pull out my new toys in anticipation of her coming home from college. So I thought this was relatable family. I really thought they'd all play a bigger part in it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's part of their attempt to grab us so early so that they're going to take the gloves off and nothing's sacred. Everything to the family dog will be killed in this film.
The dog does get the least bloodiest death, though.
Right, exactly. If you're afraid of watching little kids die or dogs die, violence against women, too bad. They're going to go there and they're going to go there gleefully to do that. I think just before we get into the kills, which I think is the point of the movie and what we can most talk about, it's worth pointing out that when this movie came out in France in 2003, there would have been some sense of reality to it, that it wouldn't just be experienced as a bunch of references. They themselves had just unearthed a serial killer that had struck France decades before. Believe it or not, this guy, Emile Louis, ever hear of him? I hadn't. But they kept mentioning him in the commentary track of saying, we wanted an actor that looked like Emile Louis, Emile Louis. And in fact, there's a line of dialogue later where Marie is trying to comfort Alex in the truck and saying, we're together, we won't die like the other ones. It would have been on the minds of everyone in France what Emile Louis did in the 1970s. He was a bus driver, and he drove special needs children, mentally and physically handicapped girls, to and from school, and some of them didn't get home. That over the years, he abducted, raped, killed them. He did not confess to that until the year 2002, when they were putting this movie together. So everyone might be seeing this as a thinly veiled true story, which so often Texas Chainsaw and those movies do try to co-opt that and say you're based on true events or what have you.
Yeah, I would think if they were doing that, that it would be in on the cover of the DVD.
Yeah.
You know, the way that it's marketed, even for The Conjuring, based on true happenings. And
again, I think you'd have to only be in France at that time watching the movie to really pick up on that vibe. But he looks like him. You know, he drives a vehicle that's not, it's not a school bus, but there are certain cues that would lead you to believe that this is kind of the Emile Louis story. But the story I was picking up most was Straw Dogs by this point. When it's mentioned that there are several rundown farms around them, that they have a nice farm because this is a rich family that moved from the city, but there are rednecks all around, I think, oh, okay, so class issues. The rednecks, for whatever reason, will be baited to come and attack them. But I didn't think it'd be happening this night. I thought we'd have a couple more days before the blood started spilling.
Hey, I like that this movie gets to the point. Like, it does not waste a lot of time, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. When I put in the movie, and I'm like, it's only 90 minutes, again, not knowing what I was in for, I'm like a little shocked by that. And we do get right to it. We do not get to know any of these family members. Mother, father, brother. I didn't even think the mother was there. Like, they take the mother food. She says something off screen later on. I'm like, why aren't we seeing the mother? Is there something wrong with the mother? We saw her doing laundry. Why isn't she coming out to see the friend? I did pick up, though, when the father's like, it's nice to see Marie, and there's the photo of Marie from the previous trip, and Marie telling Alex, I'm so happy to have met your parents. The way that came off to me was like, it's a big step. It's a stereotype that guys don't want to introduce their girlfriends to their parents, because then that means it's commitment and things. So here, the way Marie said that, I'm really picking up on this vibe.
Some of this small talk, you know, mostly just Alex prattling about a boyfriend we're never going to meet, or someone she wants to be her boyfriend who's dating a Brazilian bodybuilder or something, and she needs to get her ass toned up. It doesn't really mean anything in the moment, but upon second viewing, you might might pay attention more for the way that Marie is responding to it and how she's like, well, I'll take salsa classes with you. I mean, you can see subtly inserted in there Wallflower trying to tell this promiscuous woman, hey, what about me?
Or not so subtly, after seeing Alex naked in the shower, she goes and masturbates. Why the family is being murdered?
It's French, right? I mean, that she sees her naked. I don't, you know, Europeans generally don't have a problem with nudity.
I'm right there with you, Stuart. I didn't take it as a lesbian thing. I just said, oh, they're French.
I did know this was a French film, obviously. And when she's watching it up in the shower, though, I'm like, oh, it's a French film. So we're going to have girl on girl action is how I took it. But that was the moment I was 100% convinced that Marie had a thing for Alex, and Alex may or may not be the same way. I figured Marie was a lesbian. Maybe Alex is bi, maybe she isn't. She's very promiscuous. She's French. I don't know which way this is going to go, but...
There's a three-hour movie called Blue is the Warmest Color that explores this very thing. If you're interested, go for it. It's not a bad film at all. Good acting, and yes, definitely a lot of girl-on-girl. But that's the movie we're here to discuss right now. I think the way that we see this, you're like, well, what does it really look like? I think it really looks like this family was nice to her, said a few things, went to bed, and this girl went upstairs, got sexually aroused, and became her alter ego that killed them all.
So it's like the Incredible Hulk, only instead of getting angry when she gets horny, she becomes a killer.
It also must make her stronger, because we see her trying to like push this chest out of the way to plug in a phone. She can't do it, but she's able to decapitate the father's head by pushing some furniture by him.
My first question, where did the truck come from? Is there really a truck?
There's no truck.
There's gotta be... No?
No, there's no truck. There's no truck. This is a fake movie. I mean, this is just, it's the kind of movie I've railed out against again and again. It's identity. It's in dreams. It's the worst Shyamalan twist ever. It doesn't have any foundation.
And again, you've seen this three times, Stuart. So if anyone's picked up clues that this might actually make sense, you're the one I'm going to go to. But I don't think any of it makes sense. It's just all fantasy.
No, there's no truck to wake up the father to make him come downstairs. It would play in a different way. Perhaps she went outside and honked the horn or did something. It doesn't really matter. Make your own version up. The point is that we are to think that another person exists that does not, and we are to think that our character Marie is in danger when in fact she is causing the danger.
She's not, though. That's going to be the bummer by the end.
And the thing is, there has to be a truck because they're going to keep somebody captive in it. So,
or do they? I mean, again, did anything really happen?
Yeah, she could have just thrown her in the back of the car. Who knows?
I will say this much. My personal opinion is it's completely meaningless. It doesn't have any subtext worth exploring. The actress, Mai Nguyen, who plays Alex, when she read it, said, oh yeah, it's cut and dry. I actually did it because I just wanted to do a cut and dry movie with no existential crisis. This is straightforward. Why not? The director's... What they said on the commentary was, it's a conversation we could have at some time, what it means. We didn't have any strong ideas when we wrote it, what it could mean.
Yeah, I could tell.
I believe what it means is that they saw the film Dressed to Kill by Brian De Palma in the 1980s and said, let's do that here. It's what you expect in a horror movie from that era. Going all the way back to Psycho, there's a gender flip, right? That Norman is mother. Sleepaway Camp. We haven't done that one yet, so I won't spoil it. But there's a gender switch there. I mean, even Maniac, you know, he has girls that we think are mannequins, but sometimes they come alive and talk to him. There's always that kind of twist involving the mother and the other sex that you just got to do in this kind of film.
You're making me want to watch Maniac again. I love that remake.
Yeah, except I feel like, you know, Psycho. Like, I know this is a fake fiction story, but I want some kind of groundness to it. I want to be able to ground somewhere. Even if it is Marie as the killer, I want that to make sense by the end. Look, I don't think there's a whole lot of subtext. I agree here. So why have the switch? This would have been a perfectly fine slasher. Like, I was totally into it until you try to tell me everything I saw was wrong.
Well, that's what slashers do. I mean, Friday the 13th does that. I mean, they just, it's the expectation of the genre that you do something normally connected with women and gender and just flip it so that everyone goes, oh, and this is what they came to. It's been largely alleged, particularly by Dean R. Koontz, that much of this storyline is stolen from a Dean Arcunt's book from the mid-90s called Intensity. The only difference between what we see here and what was said in that novel is that the main girl doesn't end up being the killer. But otherwise, she's a sexually traumatized woman that goes with her student friend to Napa Valley country home, is attacked by a killer who kills everyone, takes her to a gas station, and then she finds out there's another victim chained up in the basement of his house. So she doesn't kill him and follows him back to the house to try and free the chained woman.
I remember reading that on Wiki and Kuhn saying the only reason he didn't sue is because he didn't want to draw any attention to how horrible this film was.
Yeah, and Aja said, yeah, I read that book. So again, this is a movie filled with references. He doesn't make any apologies for saying, I'm stealing from everything. He even said, like, the greenhouse they go to later. Oh, yeah, I looked at the spaceship in Alien. I mean, he went in abstract ways. I'm like, really? That's an Alien reference? But he just, again, to him, that's why he wanted to make the movie. It wasn't to tell a new story or to make a French spin on an American classic. It was to say, I love American films, and I'm going to do that scene, and that scene, and that scene, and that scene.
And again, that's not necessarily a bad thing. Didn't Kill Bill Volume 1 come out in 2003? Like, I like those films, and there's not a whole lot of originality going on in those, but it's fun kung fu, it's fun blood splatter, and that's what I enjoy with this one. I do like the kills, like, as just an extreme, violent horror thriller film. Yeah, I like it on that level.
I couldn't believe it because, again, I thought this was going to be a home invasion film. They're out in the country. It's desolate. We just saw Hellraiser 9, which is also, I guess, some kind of home invasion film. I think I know what I'm in for. The whole family huddled together, one by one, being traumatized. And so the father, you got to take him out. He's the patriarch. He's going to be the strong one. You start with him and he gets cut. He's crawling up the stairs, gets a boot to the head. I'm like, did they break his neck? What's he doing? Then comes the bureau. I don't think that it would actually go this way.
I don't care. I love how it goes.
It's so hysterical. I mean, you mentioned J-horror. I was thinking like of Suicide Club or something like that. Even Battle Royale, when the head just goes off and geysers of blood come out. And I'm like, okay, this is setting the tone. I'm loving the humor of it. I mean, it's hysterical to me when I know the MPAA is like, oh my God, that's so horrible. But if you cut that, it would be horrible. Leaving it, it's Grand Guignol hysteria. It's funny.
Yeah, I agree. It's in the R-rated cut, all of these scenes that we're going to celebrate, I assume, I think we're all on the same page here, are just trimmed almost to nothing. You never see blood spurt in the R-rated cut, which is, what's the point? This is called high tension. It's building up to these moments and then exploding in just waves of blood. You have to be soaked in it.
Yeah, that's, I was taking this title very literally. Like, I like this idea. Marie, she's smart. She's like making the bed, making that room look like it's not been lived in. So when the killer, because I still think there's a killer going on, this is all bullshit, but yeah, she's, you know, wiping the sink down. I'm like, oh, she's smart. Okay, she's going to be a smart heroine. And then the guy comes in.
I thought that was ingenious when she was wiping out the sink. I'm like, wow, she is thinking of everything. And then she hides in the tub. I'm like, wait, no, that's not smart. But here I'm like, is the killer psychic? Because, I mean, I'm wondering if there's psychic phenomena in this movie to begin with because of the dream at the beginning. And now he comes into that room and he feels the radiator. Then is it warm?
Yeah, they made a big deal about, oh, do you want me to turn the heat on now? No, I'll do it later.
And then he goes to that sink and I'm like, you know, if you're a killer coming into a house, you're probably just surveying and wanting to know where everyone is. But he not only touches the sink, touches the faucet and gets a drop of water. I'm like, that doesn't prove anything. The faucet could be leaky. I could go to half the faucets in my house and probably touch them and get a drop of water. But I'm like, is this guy psychic? And that's something that's going to increase as the movie goes on. I keep going, how does he know this? Is he psychic?
Right. And that's the game that they keep up for a full-on hour. It's a premise that I normally would throw out in the trash and say, this is horrible. Again, Identity. It is only because Aja is so skilled and that this is such a good looking production and that they are able to create tension that, you know, I can even go with this. It is a suspenseful movie for much of its running time. You have to applaud the way that they're making the film, even though, yes, when you play it back in your mind that all of this was just her crawling around on the floor and nobody was in the room.
Well, in this case, what I picture is she is the killer and she is having an out-of-body experience. Like, I would be under the bed. I am thinking I am under the bed, but I'm also lifting up the mattress on the wrong end. And here I think she's so smart again, because he lifts up the mattress. I'm like, she's damn lucky he picked up the foot of the mattress, not the head, because she could pull her legs up. And this movie's called High Tension. I'm going to admit, for the first hour, I'm tense. I'm on the edge of my seat. Home invasion movies get to me. I just saw Knock Knock with Keanu Reeves. The thing with home invasion movies that gets me is this shit's real. You can have a home invasion. Stuart knows I was thinking about starting to pack a pistol fearing home invasions.
Yeah, I do remember that. It is one of my favorite genres too. I love it. I mean, I just think that you can get so much out of it. And they're doing a real good job. Emulation, though it might be, these scenes are scary. I'm going to throw an idea out here. Should he pick up the whole mattress and see her? Obviously, he can't kill her. Would that snap Marie out of the delusion, and would she return to being the submissive student again? Is the fact that as long as she hides her real self away from the killer, allows her to go around and continue to kill the family?
Given that it's all a fantasy, I would say there's absolutely no way the killer would ever find her. I mean, it couldn't happen because she's rigged the game. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get that. But I'm saying in the symbolic way, could she, quote unquote, see herself and thus snap out of this? What must be a mad... I mean, she was there kind of fingering herself, and that's a real leap to go, you know what? I'm going to go get the knife. I'm going to break out the straight razor.
I know they want to go for that big twist because that was the thing at this time. But yeah, if they would have set it up as just more of a bizarre mystery, like where you could have the killer just look at her and then walk away. Like, did he see her? What's going on? Like, I just think that would have built up that tension to build that mystery instead of trying to fool us in a movie that, look, it's not The Sixth Sense. It doesn't make sense when you go back and watch it knowing what you know.
Aja says he doesn't even care about it.
So why should I? Why should I care about your movie?
What he cared about was creating the tension. And what he said, and I think is very right, is that we only have $2.5 million on this. It's very low budget. All of the money needs to go to the makeup effects. We can't get away with ketchup, is what he kept saying. We can't do the ketchup shot. We have to have a good makeup artist. And boy, did they find one. Gianetto De Rossi, 44-year career leading up to this. He worked with everybody. Sergio Leone, Jean Genet, Fellini, Bertolucci, Lynch. He was the guy who did the Baron's makeup in Dune. And most importantly, Fulci. We haven't talked about Lucio Fulci, but he made the ripoff Day of the Dead movie Zombie that has more eye-popping in a film than I've ever seen in any other. This is a long-storied makeup artist they got for this very low-budget shoot.
Yeah, I'll say my favorite piece of just makeup and special effects or whatever is when the mother gets it.
Yes.
And with the slit throat, and she's saying, why? And then you noticed her hands being cut off because she tried to call the cops on the phone. Like, it's ghastly.
Even when they were doing it. I mean, they show in the behind-the-scenes him slashing the thing. I gasp. I mean, like, he screwed it up the first time because it looked so real. He was like, did I actually cut her? I mean, it is that convincing.
Yeah, that scene, I was getting a little bit of Halloween. I don't know if that's what he was going for, but when we had Laurie Strode in the closet that had the slats like that, but with the mother going towards it, again, I'm tense. I'm like, the mother's dying and that's bad, but worse, the mother sees Marie in the closet, or does she? I guess maybe she does it, but Marie thinks she does. And I'm like, is she going to open the closet? Is she going to reveal Marie? I mean, part of me knows there has to be a last girl, but Aja is doing such a great job of doing this that my disbelief is entirely suspended. And I'm thinking at any moment the killer could come after her. He has me tense. This movie gripped me in a way that a horror movie hasn't in a long time. It was like a loving embrace. I couldn't believe how much I was enjoying this. And then they kill the kid.
You know what? They kill the dog. Here's what I would say. If there had been no dog, I would think the kid had a chance. When they stabbed the dog, I'm like, well, then the kid is definitely getting it. I couldn't remember how, and it is off screen. He runs into the cornfield, and we hear the shotgun blast, but...
Yeah, but they make sure to show us that body later.
Yeah, they do. They're trying to... I mean, I don't know if it makes them look more brutal or more, you know, juvenile, but they're definitely showing the gloves are off. We're going to kill anyone and everyone, and that should increase the tension.
And I did read that if you'd paid very close attention, you would have noticed that the rifle was in the house earlier.
Yeah.
So that was the father's rifle used to kill the son. I thought maybe the son got away because they have a cornfield there. I know from experience you can get lost in cornfields. We've seen enough Children of the Corn films where people are hiding in cornfields. Even though the gun went off, I'm like, maybe we're going to find out later the kid escaped. No, we're going to see the body of the kid with the blood in the back. I'm like, they are really hitting it hard. And I'm like, what about Alex? Where's Alex? Because if he's killing everyone, and when Marie finds Alex, she's all bound. And I'm like, this guy brought some serious equipment. Again, where did Marie get these high quality bondage items?
Yeah, these rubber hoses, these chains. Where did it all come from?
Yeah, I didn't even see her carrying a bag. But yeah, again, is any of this real? Does it even matter whether she would really have this or not? Is it all in her head?
Could this all just be a fantasy while she's trying to orgasm?
Yes. I was just about to say, is the whole movie just her up there on the mattress trying to climax? It could be. I mean, it doesn't matter, is I guess what I would keep asserting. If you're wanting me to say, tell me where the movie jumps from subjective to objective reality, I can't do it.
I find it very hard. You would have to come up with a whole lot of stuff that, like, instead of sitting there having a cigarette watching Alex shower, she ran to one of those rural houses, stole a truck, got some chains, came back. I mean, it's really, really hard to do.
Well, even, you know, once we get out of the house and Alex is in the back of that van and Marie goes back there and is handing her a knife and, hey, we're going to get away. It's going to be okay. And then the killer slams the door and they start driving off. It's like, it looks like Alex is playing off of someone. So is Marie back there? Is she driving? Again, it's got to just all be fantasy. It is fruitless to try to make this make some kind of actual sense.
Now, a lot of this time running around the house is just kind of the stuff you expect, but she's looking for the phone to call for help. I noticed the soundtrack. The music on this is very weird, very experimental. The high-pitched tones, it almost sounds like distorted phone rings. Do you think that there's any significance to her trying to call for help and maybe what's going on?
I mean, we'll see when she actually does call for help. She does a poor job at it.
Yeah.
Talking to the police. So, yeah, there might be something to do that.
Like her line back to reality or something. Like, I don't know. They play with the phone a lot here. It's a MacGuffin for while they're running around the house, what gets her from room to room. And it's also, yeah, just a really interesting choice for music, which I heard, really interesting choice for music, which, you know, they explained they actually had the score. They went to university and the guy already, he was just an experimental noisemaker and said, here's hours of tone noises. And they said, okay, we'll make it work somehow. So they adapted the story. They knew the score before they had shot a frame of footage.
That's interesting. But I guess if they have hours to choose from, it's easier than if you have just a little bit and you have to time your edits to the music. But yeah, the phone thing, I did love the scene where she's moving the bureau and she's trying to be quiet about it. And then it's a television jack. But then again, when she gets into that kitchen and she picks up the phone and the wires cut, I'm like, is this guy really psychic? Does he know where every phone in this house is?
Well, that's like the main wire, I thought. That would make sense to cut if you were a serial killer.
Typically in this kind of thing, yeah, it is like they're psychic and they can see the killer. The eyes of Laura Mars. I've seen this movie where they don't have the stupid twist that the heroine is also the killer. That it is more like a psychic connection that links them. And so he's in her head and he can anticipate what she's going to do. You could play with it. It's just a psychic connection. And maybe some people in the audience are thinking that. I don't remember what I was thinking. I was just thinking it was working as a suspense piece.
I absolutely love the shot when the killer is taking Alex out of the house and we see Marie just half her face. And, you know, knowing the end twist, perhaps this is symbolic, I just thought it was a beautiful shot, the way she emerges from the darkness and then recedes into this ultimate blackness. I just thought it was gorgeously filmed. I think this movie is very attractive on the eyes.
I haven't seen a French film in this movement that isn't. Whereas American films tend to be raw and will use grainy film, and unprofessional is fine as long as we get the shot, we get the makeup effect to work. That's the take we're going to use. Here, yeah, everything's a painting. Everything is orchestrated. Sometimes it's handheld, sometimes it's crane shots, but all of it beautiful cinematography.
But the killer is so thorough. The killer is so precognitive. The killer slams the back door and doesn't know he has two women in it. I thought that was, I'm like, that's the first time I saw fallibility.
Yeah, I was wondering this time. I was like, I think that they might know by this point. I think that people in the audience might be able to guess that there's some kind of collusion, if you will. There's something between the killer and Marie that is not the normal last girl stalker scenario. But you guys hadn't guessed a twist.
No, not at this point. It's not till the gas station where I really start wondering that there might be something else going on.
Right. Yeah. What is this guy seeing? If I mean...
Yes, exactly. What is Jimmy seeing at this point?
And that is, again, another tense scene. He's filling the gas. She's barefoot. I'm thinking John McClane, you know, with the glass and everything. And just... her having to run, and the pump clicks off, and she races in there, and she gets in. I'm like, I mean, I didn't expect them to leave the house, you know, going backwards. I didn't expect everyone to die so quick. I didn't expect them to leave the house, and I certainly didn't expect her to get into the gas station to ask for help. But yeah, what this clerk is seeing is very, very... hard to imagine.
You'd call the cops anyway. I mean, they're filling up at the pump and then they're running in and saying, call the cops. I'm like, okay, lady, I'm definitely not going to go and turn my back to you and sell you alcohol. But this is when he gets the Scatman Crothers death from The Shining.
And I did think that it was a mistake of the killer. Again, such careful planning, such meticulousness, brings the chains, just had the head. He ran out of gas? That was an iffy one.
It's the country. It's miles between homes. You know, what tipped me off that there might be a twist coming is it's a real quick shot, but they do a shot of the surveillance camera. And I'm like, oh, they talk something about is, are you recording at the beginning of this? You know, it's just little things like that that tell you, oh, okay, that we're supposed to pay attention. That was an important thing. And that's going to come back later, of course. We're going to see what actually happened with Jimmy getting axed up. But that was the moment where I started actively thinking, okay, maybe she's the killer. I don't see how that's going to work, but...
And they have this whole thing about the bathrooms where he searches every stall of the women's and the editing makes it seem like he's just about to come to hers. But she's hiding in the men's bathroom. And is that foretelling, of course, the fact that her gender is flipped? And again, is that smart? I don't know. I know that mostly during the commentary of this scene, all they were talking about is, this is just like Maniac. When, you know, there's a scene in the subway where a girl goes in the bathroom, hides in the stall, thinks she's safe, leaves, and that's when she gets killed. Only Marie doesn't get killed. Marie drinks from the faucet, stands up and looks in the mirror, and you think, oh yeah, that's where I'll be standing behind her. And this is where I think they have trouble with tension at this point. Now there have been so many scenes where Marie should have been caught, and we really should have the killer know of her and be trying in some way to get her. That now it's starting to seep out, right? I'm feeling like the rest of this movie is not nearly as suspenseful.
No, it's really weird. It's at this point that I couldn't look away from this film, but I'd been drinking a lot of water during it, and I really had to use the bathroom, so I paused, and I came out, and Marjorie's like, how's this movie? Oh my God, it's great. I gotta get back to it. And as soon as I get back to it, I'm like, wait, the truck actually drove off? There's no more tension. The tension is cut. The moment, I mean, sure, I'm a little worried for Alex, but we didn't spend a lot of time with Alex. This is an entire movie shown to us, I mean, even more so when I know the twist, but even at this point, from Marie's point of view, it's Marie's escape that makes me tense. And so even when she's calling the cops and jumping in a car, and I'm like, this is a stupid move. Why don't you, she's like, I can't find an address. I'm like, print a receipt. do something to find the location. Don't just hang up on the cops and run out the door.
Is there 911 different where they can't locate you on a landline like they can here?
But this is where she becomes, you know, a post-Scream girl. You know, up to this point, she's like any horror heroine from any movie from the 80s. The idea that she's going to get aggressive and I'm going to go kill the killer and save my girl and that they're lesbians, all of that feels like, oh, well, this is very contemporary, right? This feels very much like what we see in any horror movie in 2003.
And I was ready for this point. You know, there comes the point where they got to go on the offensive. And so, yeah, she's going to grab the gun that the clerk had and take his keys, drive off after the van. And I do think there is a great scene. Again, everything is ruined by this damn twist, but she has got that gun and you see the killer, like they get in this whole chase and the killer's behind her and he like just puts his hand out the window. I don't know how she would have actually seen this if this is really happening, but he like shows that he took the bullets out of the gun and just like drops them off. I'm like, oh damn. Like, yeah, you lose some tension, but that moment, like, I was into it.
And I'm like, is he psychic? Because first of all, she's smart, I think, because she's following at a distance. And when he turns off down a country road, she keeps driving so that he doesn't know he's being followed. And then she waits a little bit. She follows down. He gets behind her. She goes for the gun. He puts the hands out and is like dropping the bullets. I'm like, okay, there's psychic going on. There is something not right here because...
No, I just took him that he was a smart serial killer, that he's playing with her.
I went with smart serial killer when he checked the sink. I went with smart serial killer when he cut every phone line. But that dropping the bullets was the one step where I'm like, there's something not right here. That was my first taste. But again, I'm going psychic because we had the opening dream. I'm still thinking there's like some mental connection between them. I don't think they're the same person.
You know, when we covered The Hitcher, back when we covered that series of horror movies from 86, we kind of had this conversation as well. As could you read that movie as Rutger Hauer, it is the dark thoughts in C. Thomas Howell's head as he drives across country. Could they be the same person? And we ultimately decided by the point that he's tearing Jennifer Jason Leigh in half, like, no, really, cops are there. There's no way to read it that way. Here, again, I think that there's been too many people involved. There's just no way to believe that it could be Marie at this point. But that is where they're leading us to when they have their face off at the greenhouse.
Yeah, he flips her car, which is another thing that's hard for me to imagine. I'm like, how exactly do you flip a car?
There's only one car if this is actually happening. There's only one car. Like, she's imagining this other car being chased.
I have a recurring nightmare. I'm not even joking. Where I realize I'm driving two cars at once. And I hop out of one and into another. And I make sure it's straight. And then I hop back into the first. And so, yeah, I'm like, you know, when I'm looking at this backwards, I'm like, there's no way she could drive two cars. So did she drive the truck off the ledge? Did this accident never even happen? And all these injuries are fake. But when I don't know the twist, I'm into this movie. And the greenhouse chase, I forgot the cover. I mean, I bought the Blu-ray of this. I forgot that cover that's even on the menu screen of the disc.
Oh, I was waiting for that post with the barbed wire. That's the iconic thing for High Tension. Even before I'd seen it, I knew it's a woman holding a post with barbed wire and she's got a shaved head.
Yeah, it's the second thing you'll remember about the movie when you think about it 10 years from now. And, you know, they're very proud of this. What they did, the rig is, what they came up with, plastic post, string. You dip it in wax, and it then has the bendability that makes it look like barbed wire. They were so proud, they gave it to her. They're just like, swing it, and you'll hit this post in front of the guy. Well, she missed. And she really did draw blood. What you're seeing in one of those shots is her actually whacking the guy and drawing blood. That wasn't a makeup effect. Much of this is good makeup, but one of those is actual, real, honest to God, she whacked him. Even with plastic and string and wax, I think it hurt a lot.
I'm glad they used that take then, because I like that the people who did Crank, they're like, if you break a bone, we'll use that take. I think this, if there's blood drawn, that's the take you should use.
Yeah, the makeup artist said he had to apply 150 different injuries to this guy after she finishes with him with this post. That it's just, it's the sound effects too. I want to compliment the sound engineers. The makeup, of course, is good, but you really just, the stickiness of her pulling that out of his face and then clubbing him again. It's very convincing.
Oh, yeah. And the gore in this film is suitably fun. Even though my tension is down, we're in the act where, again, I go back to I spit on your grave or the hills have eyes. There's a time when the victim goes on the attack. This is it. Yeah, the tension's gone, but I'm cheering Marie at this moment for being so ingenious with the weapon she has, for being so tough. She gets some licks in, too. I mean, they're both bloodied, but she takes him out, and I didn't check the clock once on this except when I had to run to the restroom, so I'm like, all right, credits are gonna roll, and maybe she'll even get a kiss from the woman.
Yeah, they have other things on their mind.
Yeah, this is where I say stop the movie. Just end it here. Turn it off. Turn off the TV. Walk away.
That's my question is, would you like this movie a lot better if they didn't try so hard here with this twist? I've already said it's a genre staple. You gotta do something to make it, oh, let me run this all back again and see what was I really watching. If it doesn't work, aren't you better not doing it than the trick? I mean, this feels cheap. This feels like you punked us.
I liked the twist. I mean, admittedly, it's after knowing the twist, I sat down and tried to storyboard or just jot down notes as to how it really went. And I'm like, where'd the truck come from? You know, I could go that she was beating herself up Fight Club style with Ed Norton punching himself in the face.
Right. I liked it in Fight Club enough, even though it was kind of cheap there too, but it was to a point. It served an end.
That's my problem is I don't know what the point of this movie is, except it's a gory thriller, which is fine. Like, I could get off on some base thrills like that, but if you're going to have a twist like this, I don't know. It feels like you should be trying to do something a little bit deeper, and there's no depth here.
Aja is not deep. He is a superficial filmmaker that is at the beginning of his career. There's not to be expected.
I'd like to point out again, the films I'd seen of his, Piranha 3D. We're not talking depth there when you see a piranha eat a floating penis that's hovering in front of your face.
Yeah, but does the piranha actually end up being like one of the bikini chicks on the beach? Like, is there some dumb twist like that? Like, again, I could get into base thrills. This is just kind of an insult to my intelligence to trying to say that, yeah, all this time, this has been Marie going around killing everyone. Who knows how the cars work? Who knows how any of it works?
I would accept it, dumb and all, if they could tell us why. Why this guy? Why is Nahon the perfect embodiment of my lust for my friend? Like, I don't imagine most lesbians imagine themselves as 63-year-old French men with circular saws. I mean, why does she think that her lust looks like this? If we could have a flashback or even something in a picture, something to let us know that this was a figure from her past that maybe put this idea in her, some tease of an idea why it is Nahon and not just that it's a reference to I stand alone and irreversible. I mean, to me, this is where you offer psychology, not references.
I would just say she believes her lust to be evil and to be overpowering.
But is any of that supported by what's in the film?
And why not devil horns? Why not, you know, Dracula? I mean, she could be anything at that point. Why this guy? I think we're owed that explanation. I mean, I think it can, if they could just have done that, I would say, all right, forgiven, off the hook. That they can't do that and just do it because Nahon is admittedly a scary guy. He looks like a real serial killer. He looks like the Baron Harkonnen. But to me, I just feel like put it in the story.
I don't need to know why she picked his face. He doesn't ever speak.
No, he does. He says, Alex will turn on you like she did me. That was a big tell right there what the twist was going to be.
Oh, that's right.
At the end, not before, but you know, he's mostly defined by squeaking shoes. But once we finally get to the dream sequence as reality, he's basically asking Alex to love him. And we have some interplay going back and forth when Alex is freed and takes that knife across Marie's face.
Yeah, that was a shock. And I mean, I think Marie has saved the day and she goes and rescues Alex. And when Alex starts cutting her, I'm like, is Alex just in shock? Her family died. Is she just panicked? There was an earlier scene where Marie's telling Alex to calm down, not cry, don't make noise. And Alex is just, and I'm like, she's hysterical. completely understandable because her whole family was slaughtered that night and she's about to go off to be raped and chained up and so much else. And so I understand her hysteria, but when she's attacking Marie, it's like the slow realization. And you're right. It does not make sense. There is no way to look at this film. I mean, I want more of what I saw when the detective is looking at that security camera video. I wanted to see more of the Fight Club realization clips to see where the truck came from. I want to see this stuff explained.
I want to know why the dream becomes reality at the end. Like, what does that mean? Like, this was all supposed to be a dream and now it's playing out in real life. Is this someone just so lost in their fantasy that, again, maybe none of it's happening this way. Maybe that guy looks totally different than we were shown, but it's he's looking that way so it matches the dream.
It's just cool, guys. It's just cool. Go with it.
It's not.
And you know what? It's cool in that the dawning realization, an experience I'll never have again, but it just like, it started inside me and it was like this warmth that spread over my whole body when I'm like, oh, and they got me. They got the emotional reaction they wanted to from me. They played me like a marionette in this movie. Yep. I was tense to the point. And then when the twist came, I'm like, what? But looking back, I'm like, wait, you guys kind of cheated.
No, see, when they showed me the twist, I said, fuck you. That's not what happened. Like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, I was not wowed by this twist. I was upset by it because, again, it insults my intelligence. Like, it doesn't make sense unless this is just Marie laying in bed, fingering herself, fantasizing about it all.
It's a great cop-out is what it is. It does blow your mind, and it is completely evades everything they had built to. It's a complete cheat, and I experience it as both simultaneous. It's the I guess the good news is we still have a little bit more gore as she chases Alex through the forest to the car, and we see the guy does not drive her away like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but I think it's disemboweled. Like Nahon just kind of runs up on his car and drives the circular saw right through the front windshield and takes him in the gut.
And I like that she becomes the killer again. She becomes the man when her love is spurned. This is her feelings of hatred. They could have gone the end of the movie showing us Marie the whole way. But the fact that they didn't, but yet it seems like Philip Nahon changed his facial expression, like changed the way he played the killer at this point. He's got this like silly smile now that I don't, he leered earlier, but he never had this like rubbery grin. The way it's played here, maybe it's because I knew, but I felt it was a different type of performance now. And I'm having fun still.
Yeah. Again, it's, you're angry and you're shocked and you're still a little horrified because what's going to happen to Alex? I'm not sure how she gets away. She has some glass in her feet and she has a tire iron in her hand.
She puts a tire iron through Marie.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess the cops were just looking for them. So they had followed up on the tip and had gone gas station to gas station to try and see if there's any evidence to this woman that called in a few hours ago. And eventually they might have been able to, through videotape, identify the truck, identify where it went. I don't know. It's 2003. Were cameras everywhere in the French countryside? I don't know. But the point is, eventually, somehow, before they both bleed out, they're found by the authorities, and Marie is put into that sterile white room we saw her in the beginning of the movie.
And by this point, I'd forgotten that's how the movie started. I completely blanked. I just remembered the beginning with the dream. I did not remember the camera at all. And this ending is still like a last creepy moment where Alex is there. She can't see me, can she? And then Marie turns and reaches her arms out, kind of zombie-like. Like she's still holding out for Alex. It's just, you know, again, looking back on it, it doesn't make any sense. It'll never have this effect on me again. But in the moment, my first watching, I'm just in it.
But is that enough?
Jacob Stewart, do you recommend High Tension? Jacob.
This one's tough for me because I was into it until like the last 5 minutes of this film or last 10 minutes where they completely ruined it. I never had that sense of shock and amazement where I'm like, oh my gosh, what a twist. I can't believe they pulled that over on me. And it's just made this film just a whole nother level. I was upset by it. You know, there's a lot of like Sunshine. You've seen that Danny Boyle film, like an amazing movie until the last 10 minutes where it becomes, I hate it so much. So like, I don't know. Can I recommend like 90% of the film and just turn it off when there's 10 minutes left? Because, yeah, all the slasher stuff is great. The gore is great. The tension is there. I wish this didn't have a twist. It's going to make me give it a weak recommend because, again, that last 10 minutes, it makes me never want to watch this movie again. But, yeah, if you like slashers, you like gore, this is good for 90% of it until you get to that damn twist. So, weak, weak recommend.
All right, that's a green arrow, though.
It is.
Okay, wow.
Stuart?
You know, I experienced it like if someone I admired told me a stupid, dirty joke. You laugh politely, you laugh like a reflex, like, ah, ha, ha. And then when you think about it, you're like, that's not funny, and I actually feel bad for laughing about it. That's kind of where I'm at. Like, I feel bad recommending this movie. It's really stupid.
Yeah, I that's what I've gone through.
But it plays you. It undeniably plays you as a suspense piece. So can I recommend a film for being an empty exercise? I think is the question. You know, I hate rewarding that kind of filmmaking. Usually in Hollywood movies, these would be things I would say absolutely not. They're cheats. Don't do it. But I don't know. Aja and that French style. It is so tempting to overlook what's so stupid about this movie and focus on what works so well. I ultimately realized through all the references, the one that I ultimately came to that I think is the one that was in their mind, although they never say it, but had to be what they were thinking, was Lost Highway, right? Which is the story about a man that's following a dark road, chasing himself, ultimately, and it's videotape that proves he is the killer. This is a very stupid remake of a very stylish David Lynch film that was very popular in France. And I guess if I could recommend Lost Highway, which is all style and no substance, I can do the same for this film as well. It's a very mild one, and I hope that at the very least it inspires people to go see the really good French extreme films. They're much better than this, but it's not a bad place to begin if you're an American gorehound that's a little trepidatious about watching foreign films.
I'll just say right now, I mean, it's probably no secret, there will be a green arrow, three green arrows now, next to this movie on our archives page, because I want people to see it. Now, do I recommend it?
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing. If I'm at work and I know some of my coworkers like horror films, I'm going to just be like, go see High Tension. Don't watch a trailer. Just go watch it. Watch it like I did. Know nothing. Do I recommend it at this point, 80 minutes into a podcast where we've spoiled it? The fun's over. You get it once. This is a one-trick pony. I had an amazing time with that trick, but it's one trick. It's one and done. I will say I loved the experience of this film, but I can't see myself watching it again unless I'm showing it to someone so they can have that experience that I had.
I would want to be under some protective glass too, because when they see it, they're probably going to want to beat you up with a stick with barbed wire on it.
Yeah, I did feel angry when we got to that. Again, I want it to not make sense like in an objective way, but thematically, and this is just, it's a twist for twist's sake.
It's exactly what I never want to reward. It is empty. It feels like it should mean something, and it means nothing.
I mean, this is a punchline if you've seen Charlie Kaufman's adaptation. Like, this is a punchline.
I was just thinking about, the script that the simple brother writes is exactly this.
Yeah. Here's the thing is the movie before the twist really had me. It had me as a home invasion film. And then it slowed down a little bit at the gas station. And then the twist, the realization of the twist was great. Now, then when you think about it, it makes no sense. That's the biggest problem with it. So at this point, if you listen to the podcast, it's still a good gore fest. It's still fun, but you'll never have a great experience if you know everything because you're going to be looking for it now. I could never watch this film again and not be forensic and not be looking for things that aren't there. You know, because Aja doesn't know. So therefore, I'd be looking for the quote-unquote reality when they never even bothered to define it. So it's a recommend, but while I loved watching the film, it's not a strong recommend because it's a Kleenex. I blew my nose, and now it's time to throw it away.
Yeah, it's completely disposable, it's empty, it's superficial, and I really did come close to giving it a red because I did have to watch it three times for this podcast. And it is, again, you only need to see it once. There's really nothing here to revisit. The temptation to see if it makes sense to go back to look, I cannot see that in watching it three times, I learned anything more than my hazy memory of it a decade ago. The filmmakers themselves fully admit, we don't have answers for you if that's what you're looking for in the film.
That said, I want to give our patron Scott one of those European kisses on both cheeks because not only did he support our show, but man, I just want to give you a bro hug for giving me a movie that I enjoyed watching as much as I did this one. And one last note, thank you to every patron listening to this show. Scott went just way above and beyond to pick a movie for us to do. We do put it there. As you can hopefully tell from this and Coherence and the two Bloody Birthdays, we put our work and our research into it. Stuart watched this movie three times, and we really do put in the hours. That's why it is a very high pledge. We know it's a very high pledge, but the people who are doing $10, $11, $50, if you're a patron of our show, thank you. You are keeping us going. 100% you are doing that. And I'm talking to people. We're about 75% there. I really would like to launch a new website this year. I'm starting to get bids on what it will cost, but we're only a little bit away from hitting that mark where we can actually pay people to build us a totally new website where you guys can get donor shows and log in and do it all yourself and not have all these funky feeds and things. I'm really looking forward to bringing our website into the 21st century, and it's you patrons making it happen. So thank you.
I'll second that. Thanks so much. We look forward to talking with you next time.
So Jacob Stewart, merci for joining me. And until next time, au revoir.
Thank you to all the listeners who have backed us through our Podbean crowdfunding campaign, and we hope you've enjoyed this special bonus movie review podcast. Now Playing relies on support from listeners like you to keep going. So thanks to you all.
I need your help. I can't do anything, but I need you. I'll be back. I'll be back, Alex. I swear.
And a special thank you to Scott Justin for his support of the show and choosing this movie for our review.
I hope at least that he was worse than he was.
Unbelievable.
If you enjoy Now Playing, please head to iTunes and leave us a 5-star listing. It's the best way to help spread the word about the podcast.
We can't help you if we don't know where you are.
Well then.
Now that you've heard this review, head to the Now Playing Podcast forums and share your thoughts on this movie. The link to our forums is at nowplayingpodcast.com.
Besides, remember, we're here to study, not to party.
The opinions expressed on Now Playing are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the opinion of Enganza Media Incorporated.
You bitch, you're crazy! I'm gonna tear you to shreds!
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with the motion pictures reviewed or otherwise referred to herein. All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of the respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review and no infringement is intended.
There was nothing I could do to save them. It was just you. Alex, everything's gonna be okay from now on. Please, Alex, trust me.
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2018, all rights reserved. And no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.
Come on, Alex. It's all over. Now we can never do anything to you again.
Today we're discussing high tension, or hot tension.
Hot. No H.
Or hot tension.
Tension.
Yeah. Tension, really, but whatever.
We're not French.
No.
So Jacob Stewart, merci for joining me. And until next time, au revoir. Because there's no goddamn quotes in this movie. Yeah. I'm just going to speak French.
I know. I'm like, there's nothing to say for an opening line.
Ciao.
No, that's Italian.
Oh, I thought the French people said ciao when I was in France sometimes.
Well, I mean.
Maybe they're speaking Italian.
Yeah, maybe they thought you were Italian. I don't know.
Everyone thinks I'm Italian. I don't get it.